Mike.
Hey, Jamie, how's it going?
It's going.
Hey, Jamie, do you ever get spammed on Skype?
Nope.
No? I do all the time.
Really?
Hey, I got some crazy chick named like Butterscotch Doheny trying to friend me.
I told you the girls like you, man.
Want to chat?
Seriously?
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Well, I don't know, Mike. I think that, you know, the fact that you are so freaking mysterious and you have that air.
Why are you giving me this bullshit schmooze lately?
What bullshit? What are you talking about?
Oh, you're so mysterious.
Mike, you're awesome.
I'm not buying it.
You don't have to buy it. I'm just telling you. Okay, so what percentage? Am I trying to get a raise out of you or some shit? I'm just telling you the truth.
Hey, Jamie.
What?
We're here to do Better Call Saul.
That's right.
Better Call Saul, episode 6, Belly High.
Yes. That's correct.
Jamie, this is West Coast Project, and did you hear that Better Call Saul is renewed for season 3?
Yes!
We're starting the podcast, by the way, in case you didn't notice.
Okie doke.
Yeah, that's good, but it's not much of a surprise, huh?
No, not really.
Right, I didn't think so. I thought it was... I think when they knew that Gilligan wanted to do this, he probably had 4 or 5 seasons, however many you want, man. It's a gold mine waiting to be printed.
That's correct. Although that's a very mixed kind of a metaphor.
I know. I got stuck in the middle of it.
Right. Yes.
But anyway, that was good news. So, Jamie, do you know what Belly High is?
It's a song. And I think it's a song, like it's from a movie, right?
Yeah, it's a story, but it's a story about a mystical island, visible on the horizon but not reachable.
Ooh.
It was originally inspired by the site of Embe Island in Vanuatu.
Ooh.
Vanuatu from
Vanuatu, yeah.
James Michener.
Awesome.
It's where he was stationed at World War II. That's all Wikipedia. But yeah, it's an island. It's a dream island, I guess. Mystical island.
Wow. Okay.
But it is a song, and we will hear some of that song in this episode.
We will.
Maybe not on this podcast, unless you want to sing some of it.
If you dare me, I might.
All right. Jamie, do you drink during these podcasts?
No.
Just checking.
I may have had a Moscow mule, but I don't know. Maybe.
All right. I thought that, like, the last episode, and I even made this kind of our statement on the webpage, but the last episode of Better Call Saul was about truth. And I think this episode was about moments of truth, people reaching their moments of truth.
Well, now, I think you may have something there.
Yeah, I got an opinion.
Not just an opinion, a very good, sound opinion.
Well, people seem to be at crossroads in their careers or in their what do I do next parts of their lives. And it's just super interesting to see that.
Yeah, it was just great. I loved this episode. In fact, at one moment, while this episode was playing for me, I thought, I love this show so much. It was just great. I loved it.
I'm telling you, this show could be the best show. It's my favorite show now of all the shows I watch.
It could be the best show, seriously, Mike.
Except for maybe Making a Murderer.
Oh, God. Oh, God, why would you do that to me? I'm feeling fantastic. And I have the genius of these people in my mind. You bring up that awful, awful, sad, oh, God.
Of which we do a podcast, so don't diss it too hard, Jamie.
all right, we do Making a Murderer. It's great. It's great if you can stand it. And our podcast is awesome. And it's very compelling because even myself, who just, I cry literally every time I watch that show, I still watch it because it's very extremely compelling and watchable.
All right. Well, we won't go down that path here, but just think of it as bonfire. It's kind of a fun way to think of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a bonfire.
All right. Well, Jimmy can't sleep at the beginning of this episode, Jamie. He's up restless in his bed. Flips on the TV, sees a Chia Pet commercial. Then he watches this television station end for the evening. Before it ends, he sees the Sandpiper commercial. Now, Jamie, what the hell? Sandpiper went ahead. They went ahead and did this Sandpiper commercial after how we can't reduce ourselves and lower ourselves to that type of marketing. What the hell? I want some justification here. Vindication.
So, when I saw that, I burst out laughing. It was just so funny. I mean, okay, so I really, really didn't expect a revisit of that commercial. I didn't expect that we would hear about Sandpiper, you know, Davis and Maine disaster collaboration. But here we go. And they have Davis and Mained it.
So Jimmy is the smart guy that could be the marketing angle that they need to pump life into their firm, even though they are old stogies and they don't want to do it and their whole thing's built around other things. This was a little bit of a jilt to me. Like, why did they go ahead and do this? Proving Jimmy was righter than we thought? I mean, I always liked him for doing it.
No. No, what they did was completely take out everything from it that Jimmy had put into it. They made it a Davis and Maine production.
Well, except for the fact that we don't do television commercials.
No. Except for the fact that the only television commercial they've ever done has been blue and black, like swirling thing, most boring thing ever created.
Can you not admit that they thought Jimmy had a good idea and they didn't want to admit it to him?
No, I can't because Clifford told him. He said to him on that date, I'm going to pull up my notes and I'm going to read to you exactly what he said. I'm going to read it to you because you don't listen to me ever. I'm going to tell you exactly what he said because I have it in my notes right here. He said, it is not exactly my go-to. I'm open to it. Let's talk about it when I come back.
Yeah, I know. Hey, Jimmy broke the rules when he put it up without them knowing about it. But they finally...
No, Mike. No. They had done a commercial before. But the commercial they'd done before was the single most boring thing ever produced and put on television as a commercial. So is this.
Yeah, but somewhere along the line, they decided this is not a bad idea to do this.
Well, I mean, he said it wasn't a bad idea the first time around. Not exactly my go-to, but I'm open to it. Remember?
You just got your lie detector went off, Jamie.
That is my message.
When they were picking on him in the room, they were all saying, well, this is an old firm. We have reputations. We don't rely on this one case. But they changed their mind. Come on, you got to admit that. They changed their position.
No. That's not what happened.
All right.
He said... What did he say? Not exactly my go-to, but generally I'm open to it. And then it's the blue and black, you know, mostly dark blue.
Yeah, but what's your point? It's boring. They bored it down.
That's right. That's exactly it. In order for it to work for them, it had to be boring.
Well, they're idiots. They stole his idea and they freaking ruined it. They didn't time it during the Matlock first commercial break or whatever the hell show that he wanted to put it on. His was brilliant. Do it when they're in their first commercial break of a show that they all stopped their day to watch. And now these guys have it in the middle of the night when the flag comes on with their freaking blue and black fonts.
Yeah, but okay. So, but here's the thing. Maybe they are showing it during Matlock. Maybe they're showing it during Maglock, but they're also showing it at flag time.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
All right.
Jimmy's hungry. He looks for food and sees some old Chinese leftovers in the fridge. And then he starts to play that with the little, what are those balls called? Those stick, bent sticks? Stick ball?
Bowl balls.
Bowl balls. He plays bowl ball. Plays about every bowl ball sport there is. Basketball ball, golf bowl ball, soccer bowl ball, bowling bowl ball. A couple others. And then he heads over to his old haunt, Jamie, the nail salon.
All right, Mike, let me do my rendition of this whole first beginning that you did just now. Okay, so Jimmy is laying in bed, and he's anticipating what kind of trouble he can get into. He can't sleep because he hasn't destroyed anything yet. He gets up, and he goes and sits in front of the TV, and he sees his commercial. And it drives him out of his bloody mind because there are no people, there's no panning, nobody's broken any rules to make the commercial happen. And so he gets up and he's really irritated and he decides to go and see if he can destroy anything without actually destroying it. So then he goes and takes the bowl balls and he does every possible ball thing he can do with the bowl balls. And then when he realizes he can't destroy the apartment outright, and he hasn't done enough damage by scratching up things with the bowl balls, he decides to pack up his stuff and leave and go to the nail salon.
That's a very subjective take, Jamie.
You think? So was yours.
I like how when he gets to the nail salon, he unfolds his crappy bed from his luxurious bed in his condo, and he sleeps like a baby.
You ever watch
that? Why, like, Jamie? Why does he sleep better in his depraved situation and his depraved setting versus his luxurious setting?
Physics. Water finds its level.
I sleep like crap too.
Do you have an awesome house? Yes, you do.
No, I wish I could find the solution as simply as he finds this solution.
Well, okay, Mike. I got to tell you a secret. I think that you somehow identify with Jimmy, because Jimmy is a maverick, and I think that you like secretly have this side of yourself that kind of wants to be a little bit of a lawbreaker, you know, like you want to kind of rock the boats. And so I think that that you kind of feel like Jimmy needs to, you know, kind of let loose, and so you give him a lot of slack.
Well, Jimmy is definitely not a fit in his current situation.
I got to tell you, you're right. I have to tell you, you're right, because you said last podcast episode that Jimmy hated his job, and you were right. Jimmy hates his job.
Yeah, he's just striving against all these straps holding him down. He just doesn't fit.
Well, when Mrs. Nail Salon shows up and says, sorry, Mike, when Mrs. Nail Salon shows up and says, "What wrong? You don't like your job?" Which I gotta say, I freaking hate these people for doing this stereotypical accent for this lady. But when she shows up and says that, he says, would she say, "You get fired from your job?" He says, "Oh, if only," or something like that. Like, he wants to get fired. He hates his job.
Right. It also was cool when he laid down on his crappy bed in the closet or whatever the hell his office is in that place. His shadow was half face, like the comic tragic mask face.
That's correct. And you know, and there's, God, Mike, I'm telling you, I have thought for a while that he loves to destroy his life, and he does. He's just, Jimmy does not do well with things going well. And you and I have gone back and forth about this, and I'm frustrated with him because he just doesn't want to have a good life. And you seem to feel like that this dude is just, this is just the way it's going to be. He's not going to just fit into this nice, neat little picture that people want him to fit into. And you're absolutely right. He is not happy. And he's got to get down to the nitty gritty. He's got to get into that kind of funky place where he's got misery. He's absolutely miserable. When he was forced to live in that nail salon, he hated every second of it. He was so sad. He was scratching and climbing to get out. But now that he's got what he wants to go back.
He looks pretty happy when he's Saul. When I think of him as Saul Goodman in Breaking Bad, a number of times I'm just remembering different scenes. He seems so happy. He's like, he's a smart ass. He's cracking jokes. He just looks happier.
Yeah, you're right. You're exactly right about that. And we have talked about this back and forth. He really is. That is the person he most is. He is Saul Goodman.
All right, this takes us right up to the credits. We come back from that, and Kim is waking up and starting her day, brushing her teeth, and she's thinking, it looks like she's waiting for a call. As she's getting ready to leave, she walks past, I know there's more to this scene, but this just caught my eye, this painting of the Russian actress, Nazimova. Did you read her, check her out? A la Nazimova?
Nope.
She's a Russian actress, I think. And I tried to Google her and look her up. I couldn't really get much meaning behind why they would put her in there. But Kim liked the art, or Kim liked the actress.
Okay.
Twad, hammer it out, Jamie. Find it for us.
If you say that one more time about my typing, you're going to be in trouble.
All right, well, while you're typing, I'll keep going. Jimmy does call her and sings Belly High to her.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hold on a minute. Does she have anything to do with Belly High? Let's see. She is a silent film actress. And she was in a pacifist drama called War Brides. She was awesome.
She was born in like the 1870s, and she was kind of popular around World War I, I think. Or she died around World War I. So she was before Belly High. I think Michener's Belly High was in World War II and the Pacific Islands. So it's a little bit different. I don't know. I just couldn't. It was just maybe a piece of art that Kim liked.
She had a fake marriage to somebody named Charles Bryant, an actor, starred opposite her in War Brides on stage.
What is the meaning of Belly High, though? Why does Jimmy sing it, and what is the meaning connected to this episode? Did you catch that?
I was thinking of other things.
Okay. You're excused, then.
Sorry, Mike. I wasn't interested in Belly High.
All right, well, let's continue on, Jamie.
Can a twat hammer it out?
If you want. I'd rather have you just talk to me, though. Forget it. Mike drives home, and he has a very nonchalant visitor waiting for him, Jamie, in a red shirt, by the way, and a red scrunchie for his ponytail, too.
That's right, he did, and oh, God, that dude. All right, so somebody tweeted a picture of this dude along with his Salamanca family, and when I saw him, I was like, what the hell happened to Nacho?
Oh, you thought that was Nacho?
I was like, what the hell happened to Nacho? He looks really different without makeup.
So is this Lalo?
You know what? I don't know. He could totally be Lalo.
Yeah, we don't really ever get a name on this guy. Don't get a handle on him.
We didn't. Oh, my gosh.
But Mike politely asked, can I help you? Sitting on his front steps blocking his door. And he just says, Tio needs an answer, or we need an answer, or whatever. I don't even know how he refers to Hector, but he says, we need the answer. And Mike says, respectfully, no. The answer is no. And then, now, Jamie, Mike already had the carbon paper and the welcome mat on the way home. He doesn't go out and get it after this character shows up on his steps. He already kind of knows he needs to put up the alarm signal.
That's correct. I love Mike so much. This is the kind of stuff that Mike is like magic at. I love him. He's so smart. You know, I loved it that he just already knew. He knew trouble was coming.
And he has such a foolproof way of this alarm, right? Who's ever going to peek under the welcome mat and see if my footsteps going to get recorded? No way, man. And it's so innocuous. It's just there. And it's so effective. It's such a good idea.
It is so smart. I loved it. And, you know, and it's so, this is the kind of stuff that makes you wonder. Like, it makes me wonder, what the heck, how did anyone think of that to do, you know? Like, the writers for the story.
Probably somewhere, somehow, it's been done before. But I don't know how they remembered it or how they dug it up or if it was original, how they ever did think of it. But it is a damn good idea.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right, next we see Kim in court. She's arguing kind of by herself with just a couple other people, the medical records of the Sandpiper people. And the defense says that the plaintiffs, all these old folks, may just be too old and they have poor memories, so we need their medical records just to make sure that everybody's okay and, you know, that their testimony is really accurate. But it's really a disguised threat, really, that if people think their medical records are going to get exposed, they're going to not want to testify. And so the people involved in this little play are Rick Schweigert, who's the Schweigert and Coakley founder, the other law firm, and the lawyer that's working for him, and Kim and the judge. And Schweigert is watching her argue with this minor lawyer, this lawyer, sub-lawyer under him, and he's really impressed by what she comes up with. He actually acts impressed. I'm going to ask you, Jamie, what you think of this. But he takes her out to lunch and starts grilling her about what she's been doing and where she is with her life. And it's like her moment of truth, like I said at the beginning.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that he was impressed with Kim. She was impressive, actually, in court. I think that he is sincere in wanting to offer her a job and not just to get her off of the opposing counsel side. I think that, you know, probably he knows that Schweigert and Co. would be lucky to have Kim. And so I think the job offer is sincere. I think his praise of her is sincere. And, you know, the Moscow mule didn't hurt things.
What's in a Moscow mule, Jamie? You want to twat hammer it out?
I will twat hammer that out. Well, actually, already twat hammered it. It is two ingredients combined into one. One is vodka, and the other is ginger beer. And those are two ingredients that when the Moscow mule was invented, those were two ingredients that were like kind of overstocked in the bar where it was invented. And the bartender needed to do something with them. And the famous mugs, those brassy colored mugs that they serve them in.
Those copper. Were also, yeah, they're made out of copper.
Yeah, copper mugs. There was a lady named Sophie Brzezinski. She came to California with 2,000 copper mugs that she had designed in her father's copper shop in Russia. And she carted them around L.A. trying to sell them and couldn't. And so she found willing buyers at the Cock and Bull pub, and that is where the drink was invented. So they just got really lucky. They had an oversupply of three things that happened to go well together, and it just so happens that when you combine vodka and ginger beer and lime juice, you get a sort of a complex flavor, but the drink is so sturdy that you really, like, you can't really mess it up. It's not something you can really, you know, destroy the flavor of it really easily because you've got to have a special balance or something. So it turned out to taste really good. It was complex enough that it didn't taste like a simple combination of ingredients, and it looked distinctive. So it became its own thing.
All right, Rachel Ray, take a breath. Take a breath.
You know, she's my least favorite chef. If you want to call it that in quotes. I can't believe you just called me that. That's awful.
I have a different take on Rick than you have, Jamie.
All right.
I think Rick is taking Kim out of play from HHM. He doesn't learn anything here about Kim. He knows everything already. He doesn't come to watch this little trial presentation to see and admire her skills. He knows already that she's like kind of a superstar in the making.
Okay.
He just doesn't want that superstar on the HHM team. He wants to take her out and put her on his team so that she can't be on the HHM team.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's entirely possible. You know, it's entirely possible. And I think it wouldn't be the first time that someone has been wooed away from a law firm for the purpose of, saving, a potentially very costly case on the opposing side. So, and I don't blame him for that, but he wants to woo her. He's not trying to, get her to, just not work on the case. He wants her to work for them on a partner track, by the way.
I'm sure he wants her talent, but I think his greater desire is to take her out of play for the other side. I actually got a really good take on this from our friends at the Better Call Saul podcast.
Okay,
our friends from Chicago, Dave and Brian. I really like those guys. I listen to their podcast.
I like them too, but I have to tell you, I have them saved in my queue of podcasts on my iPad. And every time I fall asleep listening to our podcast, I end up at the one that we did together with them and them singing that crazy song that, bass, no trouble.
Yeah.
And it wakes me up every time.
They're really funny. And they make a lot of mistakes, which is really freaking hilarious. They make a lot of mistakes. Like last week, two episodes ago, they thought Jimmy had already quit. Like he came up to Kim, I quit. I've already quit. So now what are you going to do? And his partner just kind of let him say it mistakenly. And then they got ripped by all their fans. Like, he didn't quit. He was threatening to quit. It was funny. But those guys are funny.
Yeah, they are. I love those guys.
But Rick kind of lets Kim tell him about her past, that she was in the mailroom for 6 years, that HHM paid for her school. And we know that now that if she was in that mailroom for 6 years, that she was with Jimmy for a long time in the mailroom at kind of subordinate jobs. And that's probably how they got really close.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And she's paying HHM back. And Rick kind of relates how she was kind of sent on this mission today at the court session today as kind of a losing effort, that the HHM people knew that she was going to lose, but they just put her out there anyway. And that had happened to him too when he had his trial by fire when he was kind of a junior lawyer. Mm-hmm. And that the people doing that to you don't really have your back when they do that to you.
No, that's correct. They are usually just giving you a trial by fire, but not for any real reason. They usually just have other stuff to do.
So it was really interesting. At one point of their conversation near the end, when he offers her this opportunity, she almost swoons. You could see her eyes kind of roll up in her head like she was going to almost faint. But she kind of covers for it. She just says, well, that's very generous. She doesn't accept it. But you could tell she was super impressed by this opportunity he's laying in front of her.
Yeah, poor Kim. She's just looking to get out from under Howard, that ass.
And so we learned some stuff here, right? Kim's been in that mailroom, and they paid for her law degree.
We knew that from the first season.
I don't remember it in that much detail.
It was when she got fired for the Kettlemans. And she was telling Jimmy that she owed Howard and she owed HHM because they paid for law school for her.
It made me think, because I didn't remember it from then, maybe I should have, but Jimmy had to cover up the fact that he even went to law school. He didn't want anyone to even know, and yet they're paying for her. Like, why didn't they pay for Jimmy?
Because he's Jimmy.
Well, because it's Chuck. Chuck's involved.
No, because he's Jimmy.
Well, then don't have him in the frickin' mailroom.
Okay, so they can bring him in to work in the mailroom, but he's a sex offender, dude.
All right.
I'm not saying he's a danger to anyone. That was a trumped-up charge, but I'm just saying, he's not like Kim.
All right, Jimmy, Mike comes home and sees the welcome mat signal and flushes out these predators. He sees more than one set of footprints. And goes in super carefully, narrows down where they are, fakes them out with the TV coming on. Bam.
Wait a minute, Mike. Did you see how he faked it out with the TV? That almost went right past me. Okay, so he comes in. He sees the footprints on the mat underneath. He comes in. He's, checking stuff. He's, going, room to room. He's, with his gun, doing his whole thing. And then you hear that thing, that long metal chain that extends from the light bulb that's in the ceiling. It's like the light thing. The light, you know, how like if you have, I don't know if you guys had that growing up, but like in Louisiana, we had those like long metal chain that extends from like literally like the light fixture in the ceiling or the light bulb or whatever's in the ceiling. You pull it, tick, tick, and the light comes on, right? It's like a little, you know, like it's for a ceiling fan or something, but it's just a metal chain. Well, he had that thing hooked up to where if, when he pulled it, the TV would come on.
No, he
didn't. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't, Jamie. He reaches over with the remote and aims it at the TV.
No, he doesn't.
All right, I'll have to look at that again. But I would hate for you to have to admit that you were wrong next week, Jamie, when we fact check this.
All right. Okay. You know what we're gonna do? We're gonna fact check it, and then if I'm right, you have to do something, and you've got to agree right now that you're gonna do whatever it is I tell you you have to do.
All right. Whatever. He points the remote at the TV and turns it on. And of all things to turn it on to, it's Billy Mays with his quick chop as he and he's going to karate these guys in the closet. Perfect commercial. The quick chop. It's weak. So we've seen the Chia Pet and the Billy Mays commercial now.
That's correct.
And Mike gets him subdued a little bit and asks, what's the message? And they say, well, it's take the 5K, knucklehead. What do you think the message is? And we see that Mike's pretty shaky here, Jamie. He's fumbling his gun and bullets as he takes them out to clean the blood off after he kind of gets these guys out of his house. He has the oddest method of washing his hands, too. That drove me crazy watching him wash his hands.
I don't know what the hell he was doing. It didn't seem like he was washing his hands.
Well, he's washing the gun, but then he cleaned it, you know, kind of washed his hands. But you freaking let the water run on your hands, and then you take the dry towel and dry your hands off. You don't wash your hands with water and then put the towel under the water so that it's wet and then wipe your hands more and then throw it into the bottom of the sink. What the fuck?
All right, Mike, I just have to tell you. I have to tell you. You're right. You're right. You're right about the remote.
All right, so now I don't have to do whatever you want me to do?
Nope, but you missed your chance to actually make me do something.
That's all right. I'm not a taskmaster like you are. All right, Jamie, let's plow ahead through this. Kim is asked to work through lunch by God, Howard is being a real dick in this. We skipped past him in the beginning where he was just a dick storming through the hallways.
Okay, so I have to tell you, I was thinking about you so hard while that scene was happening where he's all like poutily walking down to the thing and he's refusing to speak to Kim because while she's saying like, I didn't put Chuck up to that. I didn't send him to talk to you on my behalf. Well, he was acting like such a little dilettante. It was awful. It was awful. He's earned back my scorn.
Yeah, me too. I used to like him. When it looked like Chuck was the bad guy, but not anymore. Howard's got some, unless they flip again on us, and there's a reason for this, but I don't see the reason.
Nah, he's, you know what? You know what the writers are doing? They are showing us that people are people. They don't get to be shiny and new and then an asshole. They can be both, and they usually are, and that's Howard. Howard's an ass.
All right, Jamie, there was a really cool piece of editing in this next little scene with Mike and Kaylee. She's swimming in the pool at the hotel, and he's kind of watching her. Mm-hmm. And there's the cool edit. It's the sound of his voice with her perspective underwater.
Oh, yeah.
He's talking, and she hears, like, the... Like, it's kind of marbled because she's under the water. And then she pops out of the water, and his voice gets clear. It's really brief. It's only, like half of a word or one word.
Yeah, yeah. These people, man, they're so good. They're so good. Do you know who edited this episode? Do you know if it was Kelly Dixon or if it was her?
I don't know.
Let me check it. I'm going to check it while you're doing that.
But this is the scene where Mike sees the threat of the cousins. The cousins now show up on the rooftop. Now, Jamie, let's remember a couple things. Mm-hmm. Well, hold on. Okay. Sorry, I got to rip a 2x4 for my mic stand.
What?
Hold on.
All right, audience, I want to tell you all about Mike. Mike lives in a special house where he like makes things with his bare hands, and like he lives like right in front of like a bunch of vineyards and things.
With a bunch of wood elves.
He's a wine connoisseur. He's all like, you know, sophisticated, and but he's still.
No, there's a bunch of guys doing construction outside my window. Let's talk about these cousins, Jamie. Let's remember one thing about them, and then the other thing coming up that's very interesting. The one thing about these cousins, let's just remember that Mike had the final say on these fuckers as he disposes of them in that scene in the hospital room.
That's correct.
He disposes of one of them anyway.
Yep, and he
drops,
the last one.
Drops the poisonous sharp or syringe or whatever into the sharp disposer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I mean, they hate these guys when they see him with his little granddaughter and they point at him like, we could shoot you right now. What a bunch of asses.
Those guys are bad news, but I cannot wait to see what happens because the thing is that Mike is alive in Breaking Bad and Mike has a very tense relationship. There's something that exists between Mike and those cousins. You know, he goes and he follows them and he sees them at Walt's place and he's like looking out for Walt, you know, in this situation with these cousins, and he's got a history with these dudes. So I'm really interested to find out like what the heck happened, you know, between them.
Yeah, this danger around Mike is so damn sweet. It's the best part of the show right now, this danger
absolutely
of the cartel.
Absolutely, 100%. Okay, let me just say a couple of things before we go too far. Michael Slovis directed this episode, and I really wanted to mention him because this was an awesome episode. It's the best one so far this season. I loved it. It was just so well written, so well done. It was funny. It was balanced. It had, you know, it had drama and it was so great. It had perfect, like everything, because it was suspenseful and dangerous and funny and interesting. And it had some romance and it was great. There wasn't a single moment of this episode that was not interesting. It was just great. It was written by my favorite Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad writer, Jennifer Hutcheson. She's just amazing. And Ann Cherkis, who wrote last episode, was the executive story editor, which I haven't seen credited before for Better Call Saul. So that I don't know if that's a new position, but I know that Vince Gilligan liked Ann Cherkis a lot. She actually interviewed with them to be a staff writer for Breaking Bad, and she didn't make the cut. And they called her back to interview to write for Better Call Saul, and she made the cut, and I'm glad she did because she's really good. And that's it. That's all I had to say.
Okay. So Kim goes back to the bar, the same bar that she just had lunch with Rick Swigert, and she's there thinking about the events of the day, and she's got his card, just kind of looking at it, thinking about it, probably thinking about her part in life, like her position in life and her crossroads. She watches out the window. Some guy kisses girl goodbye, and the girl leaves. And this sleazy guy comes back in and offers her a drink. So this guy was just so romantic with his little girlfriend, now is hitting on Kim.
Mm-hmm.
And this pushes her into scam mode, Jamie.
Yes, it does.
She gets the drink offer. When you're ready, that guy's going to buy you a drink. I'm ready.
That's right.
And she's ready to go into scam mode again.
But did you notice what she was drinking?
Moscow Mule.
That's correct.
Kind of hard to miss that copper mug. So he's Dale and she's Giselle.
Giselle, of all freaking names.
Giselle, what, St. Clair?
I think so, yeah.
From the Netherlands or whatever.
Yeah.
Switzerland. All right, Jimmy's at the office getting hemmed over by Erin now. She's watching his every move and dictating his every little thing he scribbles on his notepad. And Jimmy kind of complains, a watch pot never boils. Just leave me the fuck alone. Give me a little bit of room here, baby.
Which is awesome. Which is awesome because what he's saying basically is, I'm not going to F up until you leave me alone.
Yeah. I like Erin. I actually like this actress, Erin.
She's okay. The actress is awesome. The character is annoying as hell, but she's supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, I like the character.
Yeah.
I like the idea of somebody handing over Jimmy like this every second.
Yes.
All right, so Jimmy gets the call from Kim. Come on in. We got another hot one on the wire. Yeah. Now, Jimmy, we talked about Jimmy and him fucking up his life and all this and trying to get down in the dirt and the muck to be happy. What is Jimmy's need with this grift and this scam that he loves to do? Is it the money from it or the art of it?
No, my God. Come on, man. It's the adventure. He is not, if he is anything, he's not about socking away the cash. Now, when we meet him in Breaking Bad, he's trying to sock away the cash, but it's because he knows the gravy train is coming to an end. He knows that, you know, whatever he's been doing, it can't stay like that forever. And he's got to try to, you know, make hay while the sun shines. But, which I think he actually literally said in one episode. But, you know, the thing with Jimmy is that Jimmy knows, you know, this is like, it's not a long career you have when you're that crooked. So he's trying to save money. But he's all about the adventure. Look at him. I mean, this is the dude with the, you know, the bowl balls and, you know, and he literally takes a tire iron to the interior of his Mercedes to make his souvenir cup fit.
Right. Well, when he first started the grift, he needed the money from it. When he and Marco were doing it, they were using that money to kind of survive on.
No. They were using that money to get beer money and to their craft to get beer money and stuff. They didn't need it. It wasn't survival. There were jobs. They could have had jobs.
Yeah, I don't even remember what Jimmy did back in those days, those Cicero days.
Well, one part of it, he worked for his dad.
Okay, so Jimmy's need is the escape. What's Kim's need? Why is she engaged? She's taking kind of this half measure escape from her full, you know, her committed, air quotes around it, committed career to being professional all the time and being driven and focused on career. But she's taking a break from that now.
We are learning something about Kim.
What are we learning?
We are learning about Kim's history. Kim is not the straight-laced, you know, take the safe route attorney that she seems. You know, she has got a lot in common with Jimmy, more than what we would have imagined. And this willingness to take risks and this willingness to kind of get down in the dirt, you know, that is a common vein between the two of them. And it's something that I would never have anticipated. I think probably the majority of the audience would not have anticipated that about Kim, but it's a fact of who she is. And the more that we know her, the more I want to know about her because, you know, I have a feeling that Kim may just be, you know, a degree or two more stable than Jimmy. I don't think she's that far above him.
Well, Jimmy shows up as Victor, the brother of Giselle, and sets the hook on this guy, Dale, after 30 seconds of briefing. While Kim is in the bathroom,
he
just says, hey, what did she tell you? And he gets a miniature brief of the whole setting, and it only takes that little bit of information, and he's able to set the hook on this guy.
Yeah, and it wasn't even 30 seconds. It was a few lines. It was just crazy. While it was happening, I was looking at it and marveling. I could not believe that was all he needed. It was great.
So I made this note, Jamie, and I kind of think it's a moment of truth observation, and I think I'm right about it. But the fear, Mike is at a moment of truth related to fear here in this episode. He's afraid. We don't usually see him afraid. And Kim, too. When Mike's hand's shaking with the gun in the sink and he's, like, afraid of what's going to happen with his daughter-in-law and his granddaughter. I think he's really afraid of the situation with the cartel. Mm-hmm. And I think Kim's afraid of this decision she has to make.
Okay, so I think kind of what was interesting about this episode is that all of our main people are at that F it moment where it's kind of like, you know what? I'm under so much pressure right now. I don't really have a way to make a turn that is safe or that gives me any kind of guarantee or what have you. And the pressure's so much, F it. I'm just going to do what I have to do. I'm going to do what I have to do. You know, loved it.
It's funny how they say, like, you shouldn't make important life decisions under stress and pressure. But that's when they present themselves. That's when those crossroads appear, is when there's a sudden change or a big decision or pressure to do something that we can take an opportunity. It's taking a chance. It's a gamble sometimes. And you have to decide quickly.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, it was so well illustrated in this episode. I have to say, Mike, you brought me over to your side a little bit.
All right. I think I'm happy about that. All right. Mike meets with Hector now. And Hector, Jamie, you'll be happy to know he's wearing black with red trim, red highlights on his shirt.
Uh-huh.
And Hector doesn't ask him anymore. He tells him what he's going to do. And Mike asks about the pay, wants it raised to $50,000. And Hector says, no, the payment is you can live. How about that being the only payment? And threatens his daughter-in-law and granddaughter and actually acts like the Hector we know and love when we knew him from before. And Mike fights back, pushes back. He says, what if none of us walk out of here? Threatens to pull out his gun because they leave him with his gun. They search him, and all Hector's worried about is a wire. Mm-hmm. I don't care about his gun. I'm worried if he has a wire. And Mike comes up with some pretty cool poetry here and says, maybe I need the $50,000 more than you do.
That's right.
And Hector admires this, kind of laughs and just says, wow, you got big balls to be able to say that to me.
That's right.
Because Mike's surrounded all sides. He's got Nacho behind him, the cousins on one side, that Lalo dude, whoever that ponytail dude is, and Hector in front of him.
That's right.
There's no way out of there, and he's laying down the line for what he wants.
Yeah, man. Mike, dude.
All right, Mike goes home, and he hears somebody pull up. It's Nacho with the $50,000, and he has come there so that they can talk, and what he's concerned about is that Mike's going to be silent about what, you know, the little deal that they tried to pull on Tuco.
Right.
And Mike gives him $25,000 back. Pretty good criminal honor there, Jamie.
Yes, and that's why we love Mike. Mike has got, you know, I've been telling this forever, and I'm telling you, man, you know, Mike has got a code of ethics. And I think that in Vince Gilligan's universe, all criminals have a code of ethics. And it may be non-existent, you know, to the point of non-existent when it comes to insane, insane people like Tuco. But, I mean, if you think about it, like, Jimmy's got his own system, you know? Walt has his own system of, you know, like, how he, you know, where his lines were. He had lines that he would draw and things that he wasn't willing to do, you know? And you know, and it's the same thing with, you know, with all of the criminals in the Vince Gilligan universe. And I think it is never more true than it is with Mike.
Yeah, he definitely does have that code of ethics and does things he'll never even get called on, actually, just honor. It's cool to see that.
Yep.
All right, Kim, now back with Kim and Jimmy. They're waking up together, starting the day together. They've had that little scam, and then they spent the night. She's back with Jimmy. She's admiring the check. And now they're being real cute and fun and all this, but Jimmy says something really telling when he comes up to her and he says, I know a guy who can help you cash that. Now, who would that be, Jamie? Just think about it. Who would that be? Who would this reformed kind of scam slipping Jimmy, now he's got a good lawyer job, who would he know that could cash a check like that? And it's underhanded, right?
Well, it's not Marco, right? Because Marco's dead.
Do you think he's just being funny, or do you think he really does know such a guy?
No, I think he knows a guy.
Yeah, I do too. That's what's interesting about it.
Yeah.
Because he tosses it off as funny, but it's probably serious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure he knows. I mean, you know, Jimmy, somebody like Jimmy, you know, who's eventually Saul, knows probably a lot of people who are useful in situations that people don't normally find themselves in.
Right, but you would think he would get to know more of those people as Saul than he would as Jimmy McGill, Esquire, in Davis and Maine.
Yes.
Like, he may not know those people yet, but he's maybe starting to.
Well, okay, but no, because perhaps he does know folks like that. Because if Marco were alive, then Marco would probably be the person who could help him cash it. So chances are he knows another somebody that's similar to Marco, you know?
Maybe. Interesting. All right, they discuss future opportunities, and Kim admits that she apologizes to Jimmy. Jimmy, you knew exactly what you wanted, but I got in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Interesting moment of truth there.
Yep.
And she's really confused about her next choice. She doesn't know what she's going to do it, I don't think, even yet.
Maybe not.
This is where Jimmy hammers out the cup holder. He's really not fitting his mold here as the lawyer for Davis and Maine. And he's heavy-handedly making this making himself fit by this prying the cup holder out of the nice Mercedes.
That was just so awful.
And then that was the end of the episode, Jamie. Now, I have some speculation back to these cousins on the roof.
Uh-huh.
Jamie, who's the only other one that ever stopped the cousins besides Hank and Hank shooting them?
Oh, besides Hank?
Yeah.
Mike.
And Mike shooting them or Mike killing them. But who's the one who stopped them with words?
Oh, God.
Gus cannot be far behind.
Ha ha.
Gus has to help Mike out of this because Mike can't fight the cartel. He has to outwit the cartel.
You are correct.
So Gus, somewhere in this universe, is lurking, or somebody for Gus is lurking, will tell him about Mike's dilemma, and that's Mike's way out of this, Gus. Has to be, right?
Freaking genius.
We've seen everyone else.
So I was expecting Gus to show up, but I wasn't expecting Gus to show up like, you know, I didn't have an idea in my mind of how he might make an appearance, but you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, whoever tweeted that picture today, it was the photo of, like, I'm going to say it's Lalo. I think you're right. I think that dude is Lalo, the dude with the red, you know, ponytail. They tweeted a picture of the cousins, T.O., Nacho, and Lalo. That's Lalo in quotes, today, and said it was, oh, you know who tweeted it? It was one of the cousins. It was like one of the actors who plays the cousin. And he said the Salamanca clan or something like that. So if you've got like all those dudes on the scene and you've got this friction happening between them and the rest of the BCS universe, the missing ingredient is Gus. So you're right. I mean, Gus has got to show up.
Well, the time is right for him too, because Mike's at his wit's end. He can't stop these guys unless he has some sort of help. And Gus is somehow powerful enough or has an angle on these guys that allows him to have some sort of command over them.
And that's how Mike ends up working for Gus.
I think so.
Awesome. You're so freaking genius.
All right, next week is Inflatable. Who knows what that could be, 207.
Statue of Liberty.
Oh, yeah. Good. Good one. But can he be already at the statue? Do you think he's opening his office next episode?
I doubt it, seriously. So I don't know what the inflatable is. Maybe he just sees it somewhere and gets an idea and it's off in his future and he doesn't know it's his future yet. I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of that's inflatable, though.
Yeah, that's a good one, though. All right, Jimmy, that's it for 207. or 206, sorry, Belly High. How do people reach you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm at WordGirly.
G-I-R-L-Y. I'm at Scathing Tweets, and that's it for Belly High, Jamie.
It was awesome, Mike.